Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name's Walter Cruttenden and I'm here with co-host Sean Freeman.
Hello, good morning.
And we are the guys that work at the Binary Research Institute, where we investigate, explore, study this ancient idea, which seemed to be almost universal throughout ancient cultures, that history or consciousness moves in these vast cycles with alternating dark and golden ages. And to that point, we love to interview anthropologists, archaeologists, and or anyone that might know something about higher states of consciousness, because this was supposed to be the norm in the so-called higher ages. And on that topic, we have a fascinating guest today. His name is Robert Wagner, and he is the author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And that subtitle really says it all. Sean, can you give us just a little bit of background on our author here?
Yeah, Robert Wagner is the president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, the IASD. He's also the co-editor of a website called dreaminglucid.com, and it's the Lucid Dream Exchange. He's a frequent speaker at national and international dream conferences and will be featured in the upcoming PBS series called Dreamtime. He's the author of a groundbreaking new book called Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, and has been a lucid dreamer since 1975. Robert has logged more than 1,000 lucid dreams.
You make that sound almost like trips he's taken out there. So anyway, this is a fascinating topic, and let's get right into it. Robert, you on the line there?
Yeah, I sure am, Walter. Sean, it's good to be invited to talk to you.
And it's a real honor to have you on the show here. I was noticing on Amazon you have 5 stars on your book, and I've rarely read so many positive reviews. And I myself am not finished with it, but I'm enjoying it. I really find it gripping and the writing style excellent.
Oh, great. Well, I appreciate that. And it's a book that I really put my heart and soul into and decided to write after having been a lucid dreamer for more than 30 years. So there's a lot of experience built into that book.
Good. Well, it shows. And for our listeners out there, this is probably going to be part one because we have so much material here, and then we'll follow with part two. So I guess, Robert, we need to just let our listeners know the basics here of exactly what is lucid dreaming. What do you mean when you use that term?
Right. So a lucid dream is defined as a dream in which you consciously realize you were dreaming. So in that dream, you're completely aware that you're in a dream. That's what we call a lucid dream.
Okay. And I think most of us have had that experience from time to time, although I think it's a lot rarer for most people out there than it is for you, of course, who has practiced it.
You know, they've done some studies of psychology students in colleges around the world. And basically, when they ask them if they've ever had a lucid dream where they've become consciously aware in the dream state, somewhere from 42% to 92% will say that, yes, they've become consciously aware in the dream state. So I think it's relatively commonly talked about now amongst the youth. But if you ask people who are in their 50s or 60s, you'll probably just find 20, 25% of those people would say that become consciously aware in the dream state.
Right. So I know there's studies done on this. Then do you think, is there a particular age then you say where it happens more often?
You know, I think it's much more likely to happen for younger people. They have a easier time with becoming consciously aware in the dream state. I think part of that is they remember their dreams more frequently. They have more vivid dreams. And also, once people are introduced to the idea of becoming consciously aware in the dream state, frequently within a week or so they'll do it. So young people just have that kind of emotional energy that they get curious about something and just go off and get lucid.
Sure, get lucid. That sounds great. It seems sort of paradoxical to become aware while sleeping. You know, how, tell us about some of the research there, how researchers really know that this is happening.
Yeah, you know, so lucid dreaming was proven back in the late 70s. The first researcher who worked on this and scientifically proved it was Keith Hearn at the University of Hull in England. And what he realized is that during the dream state, a person is more or less paralyzed. Their major muscles are kind of disconnected and are not moving. But he realized that their eyes still move and they have rapid eye movement. So he began to wonder, could someone who became consciously aware in the dream state signal with their eyes? And so he knew a gentleman who said he became consciously aware in the dream state all the time. That was Alan Worsley. And so he brought him into the sleep lab and put pads on his eyes to record his rapid eye movement. And they made an agreement that Alan, if he became consciously aware, would move his eyes from the left to the right 8 times to signal that he was consciously aware or lucid in the dream state.
Interesting.
And so it was in the spring morning, I think in April of 1975, that Keith Hearn, who was the researcher, was watching the polygraph rapid eye movement and saw Alan Worsley signal by moving his eyes to the left and right 8 times. And he was reported as saying that philosophically and scientifically, it was a mind-blowing moment. Here in the U.S., Stephen LaBerge, in 1978, using himself as a subject at the Stanford Sleep Laboratory, basically did a very similar experiment and moved his eyes to signal that he was consciously aware in the dream state. LaBerge, of course, didn't realize that Keith Hearn had already done this kind of experiment because Keith Hearn had yet to publish anything about it. So that's how scientists prove that you could become consciously aware in the dream state.
Right, so that's actually good. That's an independent verification of you, if you will. And did the rapid eye movement, the REM, after the 8-time signal, did it continue in a sort of a normal REM state, proving that he was in the REM state?
Right, it did. And oftentimes, so what they would do in additional studies is they'd become consciously aware in the dream state, they'd signal with their eye movement, and then when they were going to perform a task, an experimental task, they would signal with their eye movement again to show the researcher, okay, this is the point where I'm going to start conducting the experiment. So like Stephen LaBerge would have some of his people signal that they were lucidly aware in the dream state, then signal that they were going to begin an experiment, like counting to 10 in the lucid dream state, and then signal at the end of counting to 10. And so by using this eye signaling, they're able to do some really interesting research on the lucid dream state and what that environment's like.
And also show that it's not the the dreamer isn't just waking up then, that they're actually lucid within the
right,
dream.
Right, yeah, but by also having some other brainwave activity and other activity, that they conclusively showed that the people continued in the sleep state, in the dream state, and so it's been totally accepted by science.
Outstanding. Good. Well, let's get into a little bit of your story then. You know, how did you, I guess, first get interested in this topic?
You know, back in 1975, that spring of 1975, when Keith Hearn and Alan Worsley did the first scientific study, I was a junior in high school in Kansas, and one of my brothers had come home from college and given me the book Journey to Ixtlan by Carlos Castaneda.
Oh, yeah.
And so as most of you probably know, Carlos Castaneda was a graduate student at UCLA who was interested in learning about psychoactive plants in the Southwest and Mexico. And so inside this book was an interesting idea about becoming consciously aware in the dream state by finding your hands in the dream. And so the technique was kind of hard to figure out, but I was just a curious high school kid. So each night before I'd go to sleep, I'd look at my hands. And as I looked at my hands, I'd tell myself, tonight in my dreams, I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming.
And let's point out to the listener that, as you mentioned in your book, it's nothing peculiar about the hands. That was just the sort of the mental command to become aware.
Right, right. It could have been anything, like tonight in my dreams when I see a can of Campbell's soup, I'll realize I'm dreaming. It was just kind of some sort of stimulus to remind me, hey, I'm dreaming. So every night I would do this, and after three nights of doing this, looking at my hands, telling myself, tonight my hands, I'll see my dreams and realize I'm dreaming, three nights later I was walking through my high school in a dream. And all of a sudden, my hands popped right in front of my face. I saw my hands they're just right there in front of my face, and I realized, wow, this is a dream. I'm dreaming this. And it was such an incredible moment to look around and realize that everything was a mental creation, was an aspect of my dreams. So that's how I taught myself back in 1975 how to become consciously aware in the dream state.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had another story in there about, I guess you were still in your youth and you were in the library in your dream.
Right, right.
Probably at school again. And what, dinosaurs popped out? Tell us about that one.
Yeah, you know, I think that was my very first lucid dream was just one I had as a young child. I was in the library. And all of a sudden, I saw that there was a dinosaur in the library walking along. And it occurred to me, I had a rational moment when I thought, wait a second, dinosaurs are extinct. This must be a dream. And so thinking that, I decided, well, if it's a dream, then I can wake up. And I woke up. So that was my very first lucid dream. And oftentimes, people have those kind of spontaneous moments of conscious awareness when they realize something is so far-fetched that this could only be a dream. And so that was technically my first spontaneous lucid dream.
Yes, and I have those kind myself. I've not practiced it intentionally, but I will now after reading your book. But just the ones where I say I meet my dad who's passed away, and then I remember, oh, yeah, my dad's not here on Earth, so this must be a dream. And it's always a wonderful experience then to start looking around at all the detail.
Right, and you know, frequently that's how many lucid dreamers become consciously aware. They'll see a deceased relative, a parent, a grandparent, and that conscious moment of realizing, wait a second, this person doesn't exist in the physical world anymore. This must be a dream. So that's another way that people often become lucidly aware.
Right. So it's really something that anyone can do. A lot of people do it by accident, but you're saying in your book, in your practice, your work, really, that people can do this and should do this as a way to just self-reflection and self-evolution?
Yeah, you know, it's something that I think anyone can learn to do as long as you're able to remember your dreams and can do some relatively simple techniques that I mention in my book and also the appendix of my book. I think lucid dreaming is something that anyone can do and also benefit from, because when you become consciously aware in the dream state, you finally get a means that you can begin to explore the dream state and understand how it works and the principles and all that's involved.
Yeah. Yeah, I always find it thrilling whenever I become aware that I'm conscious in a dream, because then it's like then you realize you're in a candy store and you can have stuff.
it's really true. Oftentimes, one of the dangerous aspects or the difficult aspects of becoming lucidly aware is that people get so excited that they wake themselves up, because oftentimes you'll have this sense of what I call lucid euphoria. You become consciously aware, and there's just something about it. You feel like you have all your senses, or you have access to all the potential of your greater mind, and sometimes, like a kid in a candy store, it's almost too much, and people wake themselves up. So you have to be a little bit careful there at the beginning stages that you don't get too excited.
Yeah, I have had that problem too. So then, you know, tell us a little bit more of exactly what it's like then to be consciously aware in the dream state, and, you know, what to do when one is lucidly aware.
Right. So you know, for most people, what you want to do when you become consciously aware in the dream state is what I call the MEM technique. And the first M stands for modulate your emotions. So when you become consciously aware, you want to modulate your emotions. The second E is to expand your awareness. So oftentimes people will do this by shouting out a command like greater clarity now, or they'll rub their hands together to kind of engage that kinesthetic sensation and kind of ground themselves in the dream. But then after that, it's important to always maintain your awareness. Frequently, lucid dreamers at the beginning, they get so entranced by what they see around them that they return to a dream and they forget that they're lucidly aware. So you have to maintain your awareness. And that final E would be to express your intent, because when you become consciously aware in the dream state, you can, in a sense, do whatever you can conceive. And so a lot of lucid dreamers in those early stages, they'll want to go flying in the dream state. A lot of them will play. They'll compare and contrast the dream world with the waking world. They'll go around and touch things or see if they can walk through a wall, those kind of things. So literally you can do whatever you want to do as long as you can maintain that lucid awareness in the dream state.
Right, which does take a little bit of practice. You know, as I was reading your book, there was something you said in there that struck me, that you, in trying to understand dreams, are often very symbolic, and you said that you could ask someone in your dream what the symbols mean. And so I tried that, and I happened to ask an inanimate object, which then spoke back to me and said, I'm an inanimate object. I can't tell you, because there was nobody around at the time.
No, that's great. Yeah, one of my first experiments in lucid dreaming was to ask a dream figure to explain one of the dream symbols in a lucid dream. And it was so incredible. I saw a symbol in the lucid dream, picked it up, and asked a friend of mine, a dream figure, to explain the symbol. And she gave a very cogent explanation. But Walter, the next time you might want to ask a dream figure or something like that. Yeah. I did have, though, one time a dream in which an ATM machine gave me financial advice. And when I woke up, I thought it was funny because ATM stands for automatic teller. And so some inanimate objects seem to have some awareness out there.
Yeah. But, well, the inanimate object, as it was telling me, it couldn't tell me the symbolism. It did have little lips on it that were moving. So. That's the beauty of dreams.
But it is quite incredible. When you get more at ease with lucid dreaming, it is quite interesting to ask the dream figures to explain the dream. And also sometimes to ask the dream figure to explain what it represents or what it's doing in the lucid dream. And frequently you'll have some incredible answers that'll really make you think.
Good. Well, hold that thought, And we'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. Okay, welcome back to Cosmic Influence. So then, Robert, just finishing on that last thought, as long as people can try to remember to modulate, engage, maintain, and express, they've got a good chance to sort of hang on to the lucidity then.
That's right. And if they can remember those ideas as they become consciously aware, then they'll have a much more solid foundation from which to begin their lucid explorations.
Okay, and give us some encouragement by telling us that that's just going to become second nature for us, right?
You know, after a while, it just does become second nature, and you'll be surprised how real the dream reality seems, because it becomes very stable and very very commonplace in a sense.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful thoughts. Well, we got a lot of things to cover, and I want to assure our listeners we will get to sort of some ancient ideas about dreams and what ancient cultures thought of dreams and some practices there. But first, let's get into just the practical value of lucid dreaming. And I was struck in reading your book, Robert, that whether one is a sort of gross materialist and believes that consciousness is nothing more than an excretion of biomatter, or whether one is more spiritually inclined, that this book has value for all of them. Can you kind of speak to then what is some of the real value of lucid dreaming?
Right. There's a lot of value to lucid dreaming, and I'll just give you some ideas here so you can see how that works up. One of the main ideas is that lucid dreaming allows us to learn about the subconscious mind and the principles of the dream environment. When you're consciously aware in the subconscious mind, you can begin to act and experiment. And so that's the one beauty of lucid dreaming. We can experiment in a scientifically valid way to really uncover what the subconscious is about and what the nature of dreaming is about. The other thing, lucid dreaming allows us to deal with emotional issues, allows us a chance for emotional healing if we need that. And I have in my book a chapter on people who have used it for physical healing, where they've actually apparently healed themselves while consciously aware in the dream state. And so that's another incredible aspect of lucid dreaming.
Well, before you go on, I got to ask you then, I can understand emotional healing, because that's, that's sort of the nature of consciousness. But physical healing, do you have an example of that?
Right. So a lucid dreamer had out-of-control menstrual bleeding, and her doctor told her she's going to have a hysterectomy if it didn't get under control. She's a very experienced lucid dreamer, so she became consciously aware in the dream state and thought that she could possibly heal herself from the dream level. So what she did, she became consciously aware. She decided she had healing energy in her hands, and she had an impulse to stick her hand into her heart. So because she's just dealing with the dream body, she could put her hand through her body and touch her heart and give healing intent or think healing intent through this action. Then she took her hand out and stuck it into her uterus and again thought that there was healing intent in her hand that would heal her uterus and take care of this issue of out-of-control menstrual bleeding. So when she woke up, she felt very good, and suddenly the bleeding was no longer occurring. She went to the doctor that day. He said, well, if it's not occurring any longer, there's no need for a hysterectomy. So this is just one example. In my book, I have about a dozen or more of lucid dreamers who apparently physically healed themselves when consciously aware in the dream state.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Both Sean and I meditate and have studied yoga for a number of years, and there is one yoga practice when you mentioned touching the heart, which is recommended in some yogic schools of when one is in fear or has heavy anxiety, they just rub the heart on the outside from left to right, and it the current tends to calm the emotion there.
Yeah, I remember this lucid dreamer said that she was surprised that she intuitively felt that she had to project healing energy on her heart before she tried to heal what seemed to be the physical problem. So, yeah, that's one of those curious things.
Yeah, it is. So I had interrupted you. You were talking. So some of the value there then is for emotional and physical healing.
Right. And also you'll find lucid dreamers who use their conscious awareness in the dream state to seek out creativity or seek out the muse, so to speak. A lot of times artists will become consciously aware in the dream state, and then they'll say, when I walk into that room, I'm going to find some artwork that I could create. And they'll walk into the room, and there'll be some incredible piece of artwork that when they wake up, they'll try to recreate. Or I was giving a talk to a public radio. A caller called in and said that he was a novelist who had become lucidly aware in the dream state. And oftentimes when he did, he would call the novel characters into his lucid dream and ask them how to continue the novel to its completion. So some of these people who are getting writer's block would use lucid dreaming to become creative and take care of that.
So, that is so beautiful. And while it sounds a little far out on the surface, it's extremely logical. Why not ask the character what should happen with them in a story?
Right. Yeah. Oftentimes they'll surprise you. They'll give you some excellent advice. Hmm. Now, in my book, I have some chapters because I wanted to see how deep the conscious mind was or the aware dreaming mind was. So I have chapters on becoming consciously aware and seeking out unknown information, like telepathic, clairvoyant, precognitive information, kind of dipping into that Jungian idea of the collective unconscious and seeing how deep it is. So when you become experienced at this, you can begin to do that as well. And I was frequently surprised by the accurate information that I could access.
Ooh, that's something I want to get into with you, the unknown and the unexpected. We just need to take a quick break. Remind our listeners, we're talking with Robert Wagner, who is the author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. We'll be right back. Okay, so unexpected or unknown information. Sort of differentiate that from looking for the known.
Right. So, frequently when you talk to lucid dreamers, they'll talk about the expectation effect, that in lucid dreams you get what you expect. If you expect to fly through a wall, you'll fly through it easily. If you don't expect to fly through a wall, you'll fly up to the wall, hit it, and bounce off, even though it's a dream. So expectation is very important in that subconscious realm of the lucid dream. But I began to wonder about that and thought, well, could I get unexpected or unknown information? So one thing that's unknown is the future. And so I began to do experiments in which I would talk to dream figures that I recognized and ask them to give me information about the future.
And this is not just about the future of the dream, but about the future in physical reality.
The future occurrence in waking reality. Like on one occasion, I saw my brother, who in physical life had told me, in waking life, had told me that he was thinking about moving to a different city and he was seriously involved with a young woman. I thought he might get married. So when I became consciously aware in the dream state and saw him, I asked him, okay, a year from now, where are you going to be living? And he told me the city. And I go, a year from now, are you going to be married? And he told me no. And so when I woke up, I kind of kicked myself because now I had to wait a year in order to see if this was valid or not. But as it turned out, a year later, he was living in the town that in the lucid dream he told me he'd be living in. And a year later, he was not married.
And but, you didn't have anything to do with the breakup, right?
And I didn't have anything to do with the breakup, exactly. So, but when people start thinking about this, and if they'll look at my book seriously, I think they'll realize that even though I don't believe the future is preordained, it's more probable that that subconscious mind, that larger awareness, gives us access to events that are likely to happen and unknown information. And so it's quite incredible on that level. But the final reason I should say that lucid dreaming is important, it's really a path that you can use for spiritual exploration and spiritual growth. The Buddhists consider dream yoga, which is basically lucid dreaming. Naropa called it one of the six paths to enlightenment. And so in this Buddhist tradition, lucid dreaming is considered a very important technique to kind of get beyond the illusion of self and the illusion of waking reality.
Right, and that seems to be somewhat of a theme we find in ancient cultures where the Egyptians, for example, where there's such a emphasis on the afterlife, they treat the waking life here on earth almost as a dream compared to the afterlife that is sought after.
Right. You know, it was interesting when I was doing research for my book, I found that the actual Sanskrit meaning of the word Maya, which normally we translate as illusion, that actually Maya meant an idea creatively transformed into something. So Maya isn't so much an illusion as creative transformation of mental energy into apparent forms around us.
That's very deep. That's probably technically more accurate. It's like, what is illusion? It is something that we have created.
Yeah, it's a creative transformation. So it's this path of lucid dreaming, even though most people just play around with it and have fun, go flying, have lucid dream sex or whatever, for many people, it's also a path of spiritual transformation. And that's why I think ancient cultures really began to investigate it and took it very seriously.
That's a beautiful thought, and that's, of course, many of our listeners believe, and we talk about that. One reason we're here is to become awake, to become self-realized. And so I'll try to get off of then just the sex dreams now and move on.
It is quite interesting. A lot of lucid dreamers, they do find a lot of their time playing around and doing fun things. And that's kind of one of the traps of lucid dreaming. Is you can have so much fun that oftentimes you never explore any of these other issues in any depth because there's just so many fun things you can do in the meantime.
Right. Just like real life?
Yeah, it's a mirror of the real world there.
Yeah. So you mentioned also that therapists have taught people to become lucid not only to deal with emotional problems like recurring nightmares, but to also improve athletic performance.
Yeah, there was a German researcher, Paul Tholey, who was a lucid dreamer, and he decided that athletes could perform their athletic performances when consciously aware in the dream state in order to try to perfect them. So like a lot of times downhill skiers, they don't want to do anything dangerous in the waking world and break their legs and all that kind of thing, but if they became consciously aware, they could do some pretty incredible techniques when lucidly aware and get some practice at it and then try to do it in the waking world. And oftentimes these athletes improve their performance by doing it lucidly. I also came across the story of a young woman who was at a tennis camp, and she was a horrible tennis player, and the next day they were going to have the tennis competition at the end of the camp. And so she had a lucid dream in which she taught herself how to be a better server. Anyway, the next day she wakes up, and she'd been practicing all night in this lucid dream, and she won the tennis match, the tennis competition, even though she is one of the worst players there. And it was because in this lucid dream she finally figured out how to serve that tennis ball. So it's amazing how people have used lucid dreaming to actually impact their waking life.
I totally believe it. It is the ultimate visualization, you know, because you're not just in a waking state visualizing something as you're also hearing other thoughts and or sounds and getting distracted. You are just totally into it in a lucid state.
Right. I think part of it is when you're lucidly aware, you're already at a very deep level. Your brainwave activity and all is at a very deep level. You don't have any thoughts about, you know, when are the kids coming home, you know, what's for dinner tonight. You're way beyond all that. So you're at a totally new level, and I think that's why it's very powerful.
Yeah, that's a great thought. Okay, well, we're speaking today with Robert Wagner, the author of Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And Robert, do you have a website that we can direct people to if they'd like to learn more about your work?
Yeah, if they want to read more about my book and some of the reviews, they can go to www.lucidadvice.com. That's lucidadvice.com. Also, if they're interested in a quarterly magazine that I help co-edit, they should go to dreaminglucid.com.
Great. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
And welcome back to the Cosmic Influence. My name is Sean Freeman, here with Walter Cruttenden, and we're talking to Robert Wagner. And so what I'd like to ask is, there's been talk about the subconscious mind and the unconscious mind going into a collective kind of a subconscious, but does it ever cross over into superconscious, into where you can actually maybe access more of a universal knowledge or a cosmic knowledge?
Right. Now, that's an excellent question. And I should say that Freud normally talked about the unconscious, and Carl Jung came up with the idea of the subconscious as kind of a meeting place between the unconscious and the conscious mind. So I kind of use unconscious and subconscious interchangeably. But I do believe that in lucid dreaming, you can access a superconscious awareness. And in my book, I have what I call a counterintuitive technique to do that. What I began to realize was that it appeared that there was an awareness behind the dream. So after a while, as a lucid dreamer, I quit interacting with the dream figures and the dream objects and the dream environment, and I began just to ask questions to that awareness behind the dream. Uh-huh. And I'd get responses. Like, you could do something like become consciously aware in the dream state and say, show me something I should see. And then all of a sudden, the lucid dream would just change. Sometimes you'd feel like you're flying through darkness and then enter into a new lucid dream, and you'd see something that was profoundly important for you to see. But also, I began to ask conceptual questions to this awareness behind the dream. Like, I'd read about an esoteric concept in some of Jane Roberts' books, one called The Feeling Tone, that all of us had a feeling tone. And so I became consciously aware and shouted out, hey, I want to hear my feeling tone. And then all of a sudden, I had a totally mind-blowing experience. It's going to take too long to talk about it, but it basically related back to Hindu concepts of the bindu and mantras and how everything is composed of sound.
So you're again, talking think, to the right audience on that, so go
well,
ahead.
I think that there, when you're consciously aware in the dream state, you have access to a supraconscious awareness. And if you'll use this counterintuitive technique and ignore everything around you and just shout out your question to it, you'll be surprised by what happened. Also, I show in my book accounts of where people have done that, and the awareness behind the dream has refuted them. Like this one woman shouted out to the awareness behind the dream, show me the beginning and the end of the universe. Okay, show me the beginning and the end of the universe. And all of a sudden, she hears a voice respond, the universe has no beginning and or end. The universe is an everlasting cycle. And so it doesn't just give you back what you expect to get. Sometimes it kind of reproves you and gives you food for thought.
That is a great thought, that we sometimes get the unexpected, thereby sort of hinting at the dreams aren't always manifestations of our expectation. There's something a little deeper than that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think we see that every time we go to interacting with this superconscious level of ourselves.
You know, as you're talking here, I'm thinking of dreams that I had. And I had a fun one the other night where I was with a fairly large crowd, and there was an avatar in front of us, and he was speaking. And most everyone was just listening to the words, and myself and a couple people that were just right up in the front near this avatar were not listening to words. We were getting just some sort of direct vibration that was just thrilling with joy, to the point where I woke up right after that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But that's the incredible thing. In a lucid dream, you can get it on so many levels. You can get it on a verbal level, on a feeling level, on a sight and sound sort of level. You can get it to an incredible depth and in total stereophonic experience.
Yeah, we're not limited by the 5 cents telephones, or those telephones can be used to pick up the other senses. Yes, that's great. In your book, you suggest lucid dreamers can access a kind of collective unconsciousness, or what Carlos Castaneda called the silent reservoir of knowledge. So that's really what you're referring to here, although different people have different names for it. It's what do you call it?
You know, it seems to be a silent reservoir of knowledge is a good way of thinking about it. You have to ask it, but once you do ask it, oftentimes you'll have a profound answer and response. And so it does seem that there is some sort of collective unconscious, some awareness that really ties all of this in together and gives us access to greater knowledge.
Okay. Good. Well, I want to get into the ancient cultures a little bit. We only have a few minutes here, but we can at least touch on it, and then we'll focus more on this in the next part coming up here.
Okay.
So I guess you've been studying not only lucid dreaming in the here and now and practicing it yourself and meeting with other researchers, but you've also been studying sort of the history of it. What's sort of some of the earliest references to it?
Well, it's interesting. One of the earlier references, I believe, is what we find in ancient Egypt. And one reason I think ancient Egypt might have had successful lucid dreamers is by the word that they use for dream, which is pronounced rizit or rezwit. But this word dream in Egyptian translates as awakening, or to come awake. And when you think about lucid dreamers, that's what they do. They become awake and aware in the lucid dreaming state, in the dream state. Also, the Egyptians showed that symbol for that word dream as an open eye. So it's not a closed eye, it's an open eye. So I think ancient Egyptians actually were deeply into lucid dreaming, and we can get into that a little bit more as we talk.
Yeah, we'll save that for part two for sure.
Great. Okay, so we're talking today with Robert Wagner. And Robert's website, once again, is
www.lucidadvice.com.
Great. You're listening to Cosmic Influence with Walter Cruttenden and co-host Sean Freeman here. And we've just concluded part one with Robert Wagner, regarding his book Lucid Dreaming, and it's a deep subject, and we're going to get into more of it here shortly. But we want to remind any of you that are interested in our work here at the Binary Research Institute that we have our annual conference coming up in October. It will be held at the National Academy of Sciences Beckman Center on the UCI campus. We have an outstanding lineup of archaeologists, anthropologists, and scientists that are exploring this idea that ancient cultures might have known something that we don't know yet. And so we invite you all to come to that. Just go to cpaconline.com. That's cpakonline.com. And in the meantime, Bring on the higher ages.